Welcome to episode 38 of the Borussia Dortmund Fan Club London podcast. Time flies when you're having fun. And it's really cool today because I've got a current player who's playing in the Premier League, who's a former Borussia Dortmund player and also a Borussia Mönchengladbach player. He played from 2014 to 2017 under Daniel Farke at Borussia Dortmund 2, die Amas, the second team, and has already notched up 135 matches with Norwich City and scored 4 goals. Welcome to our podcast. And please correct me if I'm wrong, Christoph Zimmermann.
Yes, that's correct. In German, Christoph Zimmermann. In English, more Christoph Zimmermann. I'm used to both pronunciations.
Or even Zimbo, as they call you in the Premier League. How, first of all, welcome and thank you so much for being happy to talk to about your career to BVB fans in England. It's really cool to have you on the show. And absolutely, yeah. And firstly, how did you get this nickname, Zimbo? Where did it come from?
I think initially that started with Dave Wagner, also at my time at Dortmund. I think when I joined Dortmund in 2014, he was obviously their manager, and he just sort of came up with that name that I didn't carry for 6 years, because the last one to call me Zimbo was the German under 15 national coach, but that's been a few years ago. That was in 2008. So yeah, there were about 6 years between the two. So Dave Wagner made that up basically.
Nice. And you've worked for some pretty legendary clubs, Borussia Mönchengladbach, BVB, but also you've worked under some pretty awesome coaches like Wagner and also Farke. And now you've got a new coach, which is Stuart Smith, the former Aston Villa coach. And he said a couple of days ago in the new press conference, if it were a risk, I wouldn't have joined Norwich City. So he's obviously pretty confident that he's going to keep you guys in the Premier League. How confident are you that you guys are going to stay up in the Premier League?
Well, as you mentioned, Dean Smith has been appointed at the start of this week. He's led a couple of training sessions with the group, and obviously we're now focusing on Southampton, hoping to get a good result and to get 3 points from that game tomorrow. He's just had two training sessions with the group so far, but I think, and I've watched bits of them because at the moment I'm unfortunately injured, so I can't join the lads on the pitch, but I've been able to watch a bit of the session. And I think it's the feeling you get when you watch us train, and also in those 2 days, but also obviously before that under Daniel Farke, we do have enough quality. I'm convinced of that. The training session, that it does look like there's a Premier League side training here. It doesn't look like anything else than that. So I think that has to reassure us. We've got all it takes. Probably we just needed a bit of fresh air. Sometimes you just need that change. And it will be important for us, or the only thing that's important for us, is to be able to bring that on the pitch and to get the right results. Because one thing you have to also state, and that is that from the first 11 games, 5 points just haven't been enough. Won't then also, if you go by that average, won't and will never be enough to stay in the league. So we just need to make sure the quality and the potential that we've got, that we bring that on the pitch week in, week out.
What do you see as being the issues really in defence with Norwich City in the Premier League this year?
obviously... There's a big leap between Championship and Premier League. We've seen it the first time we got promoted 2.5 years ago, because even in that season, 19-20, when we got promoted, our defensive record wasn't awesome. I think we conceded the most goals for a side who finished first in the championship ever. And we did say we're making too easy mistakes sometimes, how we're giving the ball away, and then we've been too exposed. And we knew and we said before that we will not get away with that in the Premier League. But unfortunately, in the first season, not in every, but in quite a few games, we kept making that very mistake that we probably tried to be a bit too clever, a bit too pretty playing out, lost the ball, were too exposed at the back, and in comparison to the championship, this time it always got punished. Obviously, this season, we've already conceded way too many goals. I think we can't deny that fact. I think on average, it's about 2.5 goals per game that we concede, and that means you need to score 3 every game, which is very, very difficult at that level, certainly for a newly promoted side.
And a question that I should get in right away was from our listener, Ben Ambrose, who's a local Norfolk lad. And he's a big admirer of Zimbo, as he told me. You're one of his favourite players. And he asked me straight away, what would you like to do with your future? And would you consider staying on living in Norwich like some of the other Canaries have done?
So first things first, after my playing days, which I hope will still be in just a few years' time, I hope, even though I haven't been lucky with injuries, that I've still got a few good years in me and that I can still enjoy playing on a very good level for a few more years. After that, I still wouldn't rule out that I would like to be a teacher at one point, because I just feel that this job is a job that I would love to do. I mean, as you have done your research correctly, as I was studying to become a teacher, would have been for elementary school. And I can see myself in that role. The only question is, will I, after my playing days, still study for 5 years to then become a teacher? Because it's a long time, and certainly having a family, having children, or having one child, I'm not quite sure if I see myself sitting in university for 5 years, but I would love to do that job, so not perfectly sure about that. The other side you mentioned is obviously working as a coach, as a manager, maybe. That would always be something that to have in the back of your mind, because I am quite analytical, I would say, but also, unfortunately, I have to admit that I was lucky or unlucky, whatever you want to call it, to be sitting on the stands a bit too much lately, and therefore I have had a different view on the games lately. Probably therefore I have also developed a bit more of a tactical understanding. But that would always be something, obviously, to consider, or working in those areas that got to do with analyzing games, be it as a coach or as a pundit or in whatever way, because that's obviously something that I also enjoy doing. So that's it for the time after the career, possibly. And then about living in Norwich, in Norfolk, one of the first things I was told when I arrived here was that people who once played for Norwich either stay here or always come back to visit. I would say that the one thing, coming back to visit, would be the one thing I would definitely do, because I've had a very, very good time here, and I hope there's a lot more to come. It's funny, I had the discussion with my wife a few months ago, because we're from different parts in Germany and we don't quite know where to settle after my playing days. And then the reason for us, obviously, to go back to Germany would be the family, her parents, my parents, the friends that we've got there. But then we said, if it wasn't for the family, we've got a very, very nice social environment here. We've got lots of friends here. We feel very settled at Norwich. So if it wasn't for the family, that's definitely something I would consider, just because we like the area, we like Norwich, we like the whole of Norfolk as much as we've been able to explore so far. And the people are very friendly, and the people in and around the football club, in and around this city, have been very, very good to us. So it's certainly something that's also in the back of our heads here.
That's pretty cool. It's great to hear. Maybe something like Per Mertesacker's job in Arsenal, heading up the academy, the youth academy, or as a coach in the youth academy.
I used to say something similar, actually. It's quite funny you mentioned that. Because the one thing that is a bit difficult in my eyes, if you're working as a manager, as a coach, in a professional environment in football, is that quite often you don't stay that long in one place. But certainly with having a family and having children, it's something I wouldn't necessarily want to do to my family. I would like at one point to know, okay, we settle here. This is where we live. This is where our son can go to school, and not having to probably move every other year. Because I think it's not perfectly healthy for children having to move all 2 years, say so, and having attended 5, 6, 7 different schools before they graduate. That's the one thing that speaks against it. If it was just me, probably I would also be a bit more open to that. But then the aspect of working in the academy, but probably the chances of keeping a job for a little bit longer than just a few years higher, that would always be an option as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I'm, in fact, by chance, I'm studying at the University of East Anglia, doing my doctorate in German football literature. And of course, I always love to go down to Carrow Road and watch games. So I became a member of Norwich City. But of course, my heart beats black and yellow B4B. And you have a big B4B. Well, you have a B4B history, so we're going to be talking about that, plus also about your roots, really, at Borussia Mönchengladbach. I guess one question I want to jump in with quickly before I forget it, though, is what's it like actually floating around the Premier League when you see guys who you know have also played in the Bundesliga, like Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, Mkhitaryan, Socrates, guys like that, and also some of the coaches, as you say, people like Kloppo, Kai Havertz, Timo Werner, and of course tomorrow you'll see Ralf Hasenhüttl as well, the former RB Leipzig guy, and of course the fans obviously want to hear about any anecdotes or small stories about people like our idols. So Jadon Sancho, I mean, my God, did you run into him when you were at Old Trafford?
I think Jadon Sancho, first of all, when he just joined Manchester United this year, obviously, and we haven't played them yet. When I was at Dortmund, I left 2017, and I think that was about the summer when he arrived at Dortmund. So
correct.
It didn't cross. Of those who you mentioned, the one I can relate to best and most probably is Aubameyang. So because he was at Dortmund when I was there, there were a few training sessions or friendlies that when I helped out on the first team, that we met, and I have to say I was very impressed and positively surprised that when we played Arsenal 2 years ago, it was funnily enough, he was captain for Arsenal, and that day I captained Norwich, and we met, and he remembered who I was, and I didn't expect it because he's seen so much, he's played so many games, he's been playing with some more glamorous players than I am, so I was very impressed that he remembered me and that he remembered who I was, so that was a nice thing to experience.
Yeah.
Quite similar with Jurgen Klopp as well, because I think he left Dortmund probably in 2015. So
he did.
Just been Dortmund for about 1 year at the same time. And in that time, I spent the training camp in the summer with Dortmund and probably one or two friendlies. But other than that, not too much time with the first team. But also then when we played them, it was the reverse fixture in the first Premier League season at home against Liverpool, where we lost 1-0. He also came up to me and obviously remembered me, and those are some things that I certainly do not take for granted, because given the experiences that those players, those coaches have had, it'd be easy to forget someone who just happened to be in the under 23s and every now and then helped out for training or for a game. But that was a very positive surprise for me. How well they've obviously still known me.
Yeah, Oba is a great guy. A bit flashy for Dortmund. I mean, he doesn't have the style for Dortmund. His style is more London or Paris than it is Dortmund.
But I think that's one thing where I also always feel that just because it's like his sort of style, his sort of lifestyle, one shouldn't judge that too early, because I feel if someone just in the streets would have that lifestyle, it probably people wouldn't be too opinionated about that. But because he's a footballer, then sometimes you think, oh yeah, people are questioning, oh, what's going on with them, just because they have a bit more extravagant lifestyle.
Yeah, that's they have money.
He's like, whenever I was in touch with Aubameyang, he was the nicest guy ever, like the nicest guy you can imagine. And that's just something that I find really important, because sometimes I have the opinion just because someone's a footballer and behaves in a certain way, people just have a certain and sometimes not the nicest opinion about people.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Where someone should be quite careful about, because at the end of the day, quite often, how well do we know someone else? And how well can we really judge someone else? But yeah, that's the things I can definitely say about Klopp and Aubameyang. That was very, very positive for me.
Absolutely. Really nice anecdotes, and it's really good to hear. On my own side, I met Jadon Sancho when he first joined Dortmund. I'd been a reporter covering the under-17 World Cup in India, which Jadon, they became world champion. And I took my England shirt along to the Christmas party of BVB. And I asked Jadon to sign his under-17 World Cup winning shirt that I had. And Oba was standing next to him. And Jadon was like this young guy, like 17 years old. And he was looking at big brother Oba. And Oba was kind of looking over, admiring Jadon. And they were kind of exchanging. Like, Jadon was thinking, yeah, this is cool. This is the life. You know, I'm standing here. I'm signing my England shirt. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang next to me. And I was just very blessed to witness that. You can imagine it's a pretty cool scene, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
For sure. And then when Oba signed at Arsenal, I went with the London Fan Club. We went to the Emirates Stadium to his first game against Everton, and we put our London flag, BVB London, behind the goal. And Oba kind of looked over at us, and yeah, we just, you know, wanted to say that we're still fans of Pierre-Emerick, whatever he's doing, basically. And you know, so many great guys come back to Dortmund, and it's really, really great to see when that happens. You know, in the past, like Shinji Kagawa, Nuri Sahin, and so on. You know, could you ever imagine coming back to BVB to play in BVB?
Well, frankly, I think I'm not good enough for the first team there, so that would be difficult. It would, if I could choose, that would always be a great place to go back to. I think I just have quite a special connection still with Dortmund, because even though it's just been 3 years, I made loads of memories there. Obviously, I lived there for 3 years. It was first own flat for me, like moving out from my parents' place. Gotten to know many, many great guys in the club, still in contact with a few of my former teammates who then went on to play at different clubs. So it's been quite important, very, very, very good and decisive 3 years for me at that club. And I feel more related, if you can say so, if that's the right word.
Yeah, sure.
More bound still to Dortmund than to Mönchengladbach, even though I just had 3 years there as opposed to 8 at Mönchengladbach.
Sure, absolutely. And which of the players would you like to highlight from that time from BVB? I mean, certainly, I'm thinking also Felix Paslak. It must have been pretty cool when he came over to join you guys.
Yeah, even though that was just for 1 year, but when he was out alone, it was quite surreal to see him then on the training pitch in Norwich next to me. But yeah,
that's great.
I enjoyed that. And other than that, obviously, as I was playing for the second team in Dortmund, my centre-half colleague Patrick Mainka is currently with Heidenheim in the second league.
Yeah,
we're talking or texting regularly, and he's had. I think it's already his fourth season there maybe now.
Yeah.
He's also, since the start of this season, I think the club captain. So he's had a great, great development, has had a few good years, almost got them promoted to the Bundesliga, which would have been an unbelievable achievement for Heidenheim. So I think probably he's the one I'm still in contact with most. And our goalkeeper from the times, Hendrik Bonnmann, he's with Würzburg now. They unfortunately last summer they got relegated from the second to the third tier. But yeah, those two are the ones probably that I still hear from most.
And nice. I know Hendrik actually. Yeah, I know him when he's from 1860 Munich. But back in the day when he was with the Amas, he came and signed off Lag, and I had a chat with him, a bit of an interview. Pretty good guy, very tall guy. Yeah,
very and, tall.
Yeah, he was at 1860 Munich, which is a pretty classic cult club as well, where down Sascha Mölders is down there, one of my favorite players.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Yeah, and Felix Pasalek, honestly, he seems like the most simpatico, kind of congenial, nice guy I've ever seen on playing for B4B. His personality, he really seems like a cool guy. Am I right?
Yeah, 100%. And he's always always in a good mood, always very supportive, even though he didn't play too much for us in that season. I mean, it was just the season where everything sort of worked well for us and Max was playing right back. And unfortunately, Felix was just the second option on that position. And Max was always fit, always playing well. So Felix didn't get to play too many games. But despite that, he was always supportive, always training with a smile on his face, always good attitude, also good training. And I'm very pleased to see he's with Dortmund. I think he just a few months ago signed a new deal, gets his appearances in the first team then. So. And probably the best thing I've seen was last summer when they won the DFB Pokal, when he was sort of leading the celebrations. That was a very pleasant thing to see to me.
Absolutely great. Which is, of course, winning the DFB Pokal is the height, and you know Dortmund won it in 2017. I was at the Berlin Olympic Stadium, had that beautiful privilege to be there in the yellow wall with the fans, and then also 2021 we watched it at the B4B Stammtisch in London. We would really love you to come to our Stammtisch and have a Dortmund on your beer sometime, but. We try and invite you anyway. We'll see whether you find the time, maybe one day.
Maybe one day, yeah. And maybe if COVID allows us to, that would be certainly a good thing to do.
That would be great. Another BVB player who played with you there is Moritz Leitner. So some fans remember him from the Champions League. What's Moritz like as a guy? And by the way, what do you think the best position is for Felix Pasalek and Moritz Leitner? Moritz is now in FC Zürich, I think, right? He's playing in Switzerland. Yeah,
exactly.
Which is also a pretty awesome club as well.
Yeah, big club there. I was quite happy when I seen he got the move there. I think it's good as long as he's. I think he had some issues with his elbow about a month ago, so he had to miss like one or two games. Other than that, he's played lots of minutes there. I'm just happy to see him on a football pitch again, see him playing games, because he, for the time that he's been with us, he was actually one of my closest friends in the team. So quite often, I think on a Thursday after training, when we have the afternoon off, we would spend the afternoons together, sometimes even leading into the evenings, and certainly quite often on a Sunday, we watched NFL together at his place. So
nice. Do you have a team that you follow?
My sort of favorite team is Pittsburgh Steelers.
Wow, that's awesome. Pittsburgh Steelers. It's black and yellow, I think, isn't it?
Like this. Like before me. even though that wasn't the reason why, but it's a good, it's funny coincidence. Yeah. No, so I think we just shared some common interests. So I was quite close with Moritz, and then it obviously was a bit sad for me to see him leave.
Sure, that's football, isn't it?
Pardon?
That's football, right?
It is. I mean, if you can't handle that, then probably football isn't the right job for you. But no, I've been very, very good with him. He's been an excellent friend to me. We had some good years here with the promotion in 2019. We got promoted. I think I also got a bit wrong in the start. So that was a brilliant season, obviously, for us. And I think sometimes just when it goes so well and you share those moments, that's also what makes the friendship a bit better as well. Coming to best positions, I've just seen Felix Passler playing right back and sometimes in the Academy of Dortmund, right winger. So somewhere around that right side, I definitely see him. But I can just judge him as a right back, so therefore difficult for me to say how good he is on the wing, because I never played alongside him. With Moritz, to me, he's certainly central midfielder, probably sort of number eight, one of those half positions. That's where I would see him, maybe, because he is, I think, the player maybe still holds the record for most covered distance for Norwich City in a competitive game, because he can just run forever and he would just cover lots and lots of grounds. He's got the ability, the physicality to compete on the highest levels. So I think number eight would probably be, in my eyes, his favorite position.
That's pretty awesome, yeah. You mentioned Max Ahrens a few minutes ago. It's interesting to hear that because he's been on the potential list of transfers for Bayern München, but also for BVB, some rumors in the last season. Do you think that Max would make it in the Bundesliga?
Now time for a short announcement. If you love Borussia Dortmund, why not join us for a live game and have a couple of Dortmund Union beers at the Stammtisch meetup of the official Borussia Dortmund fan club in London? We meet on match days at the Fitzroy Wine Cellar on Cleveland Street. For more details, head to our Facebook page or give us a call on 07459-394-121. And now, back to the show.
First of all, I'm quite happy we've got him here.
Yeah, of course.
But I think he's got all it takes to play in any of the top five leagues. I just speaking for myself, I can say for me it was very, very good to have that change to come to a different country, because it really helped to improve my career. So I think just sometimes leaving your comfort zone and taking a step into, I don't know, even going abroad and playing there can help. I can definitely see that he's got all it takes to compete in the Bundesliga. I have no doubts about that. But I think at the moment, if you got the opportunity to play in the Premier League, that's probably the best league in the world at the moment. So, and also for personal reasons, I just hope he's going to stay with us for a little longer.
Yeah. Is there a very big difference? I mean, firstly, I remember watching your video when you first joined Norwich City in 2017, and you said you were honoured and delighted to join Norwich City. Does it still feel like a delight and an honour to play for the Canaries? And if so, why? What makes Carrow Road so special? What makes this football club so special?
100%. I'm still sticking to my word from 4.5 years ago. Back then, the motivation was, okay, I came from the fourth tier in Germany, and having the opportunity to play in the Championship, playing in England, we say the motherland of football, is the best thing. It was always the best thing for me that I was able to imagine.
Cool.
I also talked about that time when I was 10, 12 years old. And me and my brother, and also sometimes my father, we would watch Premier League highlights on German television, because there was a TV channel that every, I think, Monday nights delivered the highlights of the Premier League. And that was one thing we stayed up to watch, because we just enjoyed the English football so much. And then being given the opportunity to play in England, I know at that time in the Championship, but just to be able to play in England was amazing for me. And also with Norwich, it's a club that had spent some years in the Premier League recently as well. And obviously I didn't know too much about the club itself and about how the club operates, but having spent 4.5 years here now, I obviously know a little bit more about how this club is run, how Delia and Michael care for this club. And I think that's unique in professional football and on that level. I mean, we always stress that we are, I think, in the Premier League, the only, and in the top leagues, one of the very few funding clubs. And I think that's a thing to be proud of, seeing how much the community plays part, how important the football club is to so many people in Norfolk, because we're the only football club only professional football club in Norfolk. To see the support, to see how everyone supports us is amazing. I think that's what makes it very, very special to play for Norwich. And it is, I know our methods, our ways are probably unique in the Premier League, and we don't have always the financial abilities to compete, obviously, with the big clubs. But I do enjoy being in a club like Norwich, or being with Norwich and doing it differently in our way. I think the thing that I like to compare it to the most, certainly when we are in the Premier League, is to Asterix and Obelix.
Absolutely.
That Gaelic village, of Gaelic town or village, I don't know how you would probably translate
it. Absolute village, yeah, sure.
That, that is sort of surrounded by all the others, that is, and not surrounded by all the others, so that's a bit misleading.
Well, there's some big guns in Premier League.
Geography of Norwich, where you've got around you, you've just got like bigger, potentially clubs, but you're still sort of, you're out there, we're out here far in the east, and we should make it a really, really difficult place to conquer for others. That's how I would sort of use that analogy with the Gaelic village to us, because I think that's what
Fantastic.
We need to try. We're doing it differently. We are unique in our ways, and we just need to make sure we're hard to beat for anyone, and that we don't make it a pleasure to travel out that long way to Norfolk for any of the other teams.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've been to a few matches at Carrow Road, and it's a really, really great atmosphere. I was at your pre-season game against a third tier team. I can't remember which one it was. Yeah, Gillingham, the Guilds. Yeah. And it was a 5-0 win. And that was pretty fun. It was pretty, I guess it must have been pretty fun to be sitting on the bench for that game too. I mean, it was a good 5-0 is always fun, right?
5-0 is always fun. And one thing we can't forget as well is it was the first time, I think, when we were allowed to have supporters back at Carrow Road, other than those two occasions in the Championship where we travelled with 1,000, 2,000 supporters. So I think it was a very, very good game. We had a good game. The support was very good. Quite similar to the 6-0 in the Cup against Bournemouth, I would say.
That's right. And my friend Osman, who's originally from Gambia, he wanted to ask you, what is the best place to eat in Norwich? Can you recommend any good places for good food?
I am not the best person to ask this question. It's the first thing I want to say about it, because we don't go out that much, just because of our little son who's 1.5 years old, and we don't always get a babysitter.
So that's congratulations.
Easy. Thank you. But when we did, so before he was born, or even every now and then, probably when he was in nursery and we could go out for rather lunch and dinner, the two places we would go to most frequently would be Hegel. It's more like Turkish and Turkish restaurants. That's, I think, quite famous amongst the players anyway. And another thing that, another restaurant that we really liked is an Italian called Benoli. They have their own freshly made pasta, so they make their pasta themselves at the restaurant, and I think that was a very, very good place. I think some friends recommended it to us, so it was a recommendation I got independently of other footballers, so from just someone else, and we went there with a befriended couple, and that was also very good. So yeah, I would say Hegel and Benoli, those two are my favorite.
Nice heads up for restaurants in Norwich. Talk to me about this. What's special about playing for Norwich City? One of the things I think that's pretty exciting is the derby against Ipswich Town. And certainly, I know I interviewed Paul Lambert not long ago, who was the Ipswich Town, but also the Norwich City, and also a former BVB player. He won the Champions League in '97, and Ipswich Town is a club which has a big reputation as well. I think, if I'm not mistaken, they won the UEFA Cup in 1981 or 1980. So going down to Portman Road as a Norwich City player must be pretty special. That derby with Ipswich Town, which you played in, I think you even scored a goal against Ipswich, but I might be wrong.
You, unfortunately, you're wrong about that. I would have loved to score a goal in that derby, but I didn't. We had, in our time here, we had four derbies against Ipswich, three in which I featured, and I'm proud enough to say that we have, in those where I played, we've won two and drawn one. So unbeaten in the East Anglian derby, that was very important for me. It is a very special atmosphere. You can sense it is the only derby for us. And also just in the build-up that it's our playing Ipswich on the weekend. So you can just tell there's a different not spirits probably, but like tension. Because you know, okay, this is going to be a big one. That's the one for the fans. That's the one we need to win. And my first derby, we played at Portman Road. We won 1-0. James Maddison scored. So that was a brilliant experience, I have to say. The reverse fixture was a 1-1 where Tim Closer scored. We conceded in the 88th minute or so from a corner. And then Tim Closer scored after a Grant Henley cross in the 95th minute. And that moment, like the noise at Carrow Road for that equaliser was probably the loudest I've ever heard in a football ground. So that was very special. And then
amazing.
The last derby I played was a 3-0 at home in the season we got promoted 1819. That was I think somewhere in February 2019. We were top of the table. Ipswich were bottom of the table. We were playing at home, so everyone was expecting us to win.
Yeah, they dropped down to League One.
Exactly, that was the season. And we scored after 2 minutes. Onela Nanda scored, and you could sense, okay, it's all going the right way. But then after like 30, 35 minutes, you could feel Ipswich are getting better and better, and they were really giving us a hard fight. At the end of the day, it was a 3-0 for us. Temu scored two second-half goals. But until we scored the second and then the third, it was a very, very tight game. It was a true battle, I have to say. And that's also what our manager at the time always used to say. For a derby, the table doesn't matter. It's a derby. It doesn't matter how good you are, how bad you're doing, if you're first, if you're last. It's always going to be a fight. And even though it was a 3-0 and it looked comfortable on paper, that was a very, very tight and a very tough game, because you could also sense how much it meant to the Ipswich players. I mean, even I think Paul Lambert got sent off in that game. So it was heated up. There was lots of emotion in that game, on the pitch, off the pitch. You can always sense it's a special game.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And Paul Lambert is, of course, a massive legend. And as I said, I had the pleasure of meeting him and interviewing him. And he actually became an honorary member of this fan club. And of course, we would also be honored if you would become an honorary member of the London fan club of BVB, if that's possible for you.
Let's see what we can make happen there.
That's absolutely great. So you're living the dream, Christoph, in England, playing in the Premier League. And what do your friends back home who are playing in the Bundesliga think about you traveling around, moving to Manchester United, Arsenal, Tottenham Hotspurs? Which are the clubs that have made the biggest impression on you in England? And I think I have to ask you about the Sadio Mane incident 1 year ago, almost exactly 1 year ago, if I'm not mistaken. He's a beast, isn't he? An absolute beast. But playing at Anfield or playing against Liverpool is always a big thing, isn't it?
So in terms of living the dream, in a way, yes. In a way, no, because I've been injured for that a bit too much lately, and I would love to just be back out on the pitch and then like properly living that dream and playing in England, playing in the Premier League. And I hope once my current injury has resolved that I will be able to train well and impress, and then be hopefully back on the pitch as soon as possible and being able to help the team. So that would make it a real dream. And other than that, yes, there's obviously very, very traditional, well-known football grounds here in England. And to us Germans, just the sound of a stadium is a lot better in English than in German. So if you go back, even like, say, Old Trafford or Anfield Road, that just got a different sound to it, like some of the German stadium names, and also the former Spurs grounds, White Hart Lane. It's just something quite special to say, yeah, you played there. I mean, I never played at White Hart Lane, but I've been lucky so far that I've had games at Stamford Bridge in the Cup, at the Emirates in the Cup, Man City at the Etihad 2 seasons ago. Same with Manchester United, and also with Tottenham Hotspurs. The only thing that's left for me is, in fact, Anfield away. Just played Liverpool at home on the opening day of the season. I was unfortunately injured as well 2.5 years ago. So Liverpool is still one on my list that I hope I will be able to cross off this season. I have to say the new Tottenham ground is very, very impressive just because it's so modern. The changing rooms are huge. Sometimes you go to an away dressing room and it's tiny. Yeah. And you don't know how to squeeze 20 players in there, but with Spurs, it's just massive. Yeah. Manchester United I haven't seen Anfield yet, but Manchester United's Old Trafford is a very big, very intimidating ground as well. And just if you make yourself aware, well, we're playing Man United at the moment, that is a very, very big thing. Because also when I was growing up, when I was probably 10, 12, 15, the time when Man United was in the Champions League, always making it to the quarter, the semi-finals, sometimes even the final, I remember against Barcelona, against Barcelona when I think they lost 3-1. One final, I think they played against Chelsea, if I'm not mistaken. So it could have been around like late 2000s. So that was the club that was probably the best in England at that time. And so then a few years later, playing there at Old Trafford yourself is a very, very special experience.
I guess meeting Ronaldo it should be pretty cool as well.
Yeah, that's for sure, because he's one of the best players that's ever been around. His record also for Portugal is unbelievable. And even now for Manchester United, I think he delivers week in, week out with goals and assists, even though Man United are probably not at their best at the moment. But yeah, the way he performs, and he's, I think, already, I'm not quite sure, 35, 36, so... With some very, very good footballers, they get, I don't know, they get a bit worse when they get to a certain age. But with him also, if you look at Ibrahimovic, he's 40. How they can at this age still perform at this level is very, very impressive.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I watched a lot of the European Championships this summer. And I had the pleasure of organizing the Fan International between England and Germany before the England-Germany game. And I really admire the way Timo Pukki was playing for Finland as well. It must be pretty cool to play alongside guys like Timo Pukki, but also last season, Emilio Buendia as well, who moved to my English club, Aston Villa, on a massive deal. I think it was 40 million. How does it feel as a footballer to be traded for a lot of cash like that? And also, how does one manage as a footballer with large amounts of money to go from the Regionalliga, where you're earning maybe a small amount, to suddenly earning a lot of money? Is it a lot of stress, that aspect of being a professional footballer? I guess a lot of people listening would love to be a footballer themselves, you know?
Well, first of all, in terms of Timo Pukki and Emi Buendia, it's because to me they're teammates and they're colleagues and friends of mine. Again, Timo, one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet.
And he looks like it.
It's funny if you then see him playing for Finland, you know he's a national hero there. And people in Finland just love him. And when I was on crutches, he was, because he doesn't live away too far from me, he was sometimes giving me a lift to the train and going back. It's quite funny if a person like this gives you a lift and then you know in Finland he's a national hero and probably he can't walk on the streets without...
Yeah.
Hundreds of people coming up to him and asking for pictures and signatures.
Yeah.
And with Emmy, also, I had the pleasure to spend 3 years with him. He's the one teammate I would say he's probably the best footballer I've played with and trained with so far. I found Emmy's ability unbelievable. He was the sort of player you're looking for when you're thinking you're 2-0 down in a game, you've got nothing you can bring him on and he can change the game because he can create something from nothing. So Emi is, as I said, he's the best player I've played with and I trained with so far. And
nice.
In terms of what you said, how it feels like to be traded for a lot of money, I have no clue because no club so far had to pay any transfer fee for me, so I was always a bargain.
yeah, right.
But I can imagine.
But Emi moved for 40 probably, million, which is huge.
I know, and probably that's not easy because you'll always carry that price tag with you. And I know when sometimes Maguire makes a mistake, people say, "Yeah, and you spent 80 million on him." And I think that's just not fair on players because that doesn't mean that you never make a mistake. But you will always have that price tag on you, I think, when you have a big move like that and when a club spends loads of money on him. It's just one of the things that will come with a move like that. And then what exactly was in the last question that you mentioned?
No, I mean when you moved from Regionalliga to playing in the Premier League, obviously that brings with it a lot more pressure, but also a financial, very different situation. Is that a very pressurizing situation to be earning a lot more and to have to think about the future and how to plan your finances? And, you know, it's not a small thing. I've interviewed quite a lot of people now, including many former BVB players, and planning for the future, planning for your careers ahead. Some guys do it very, very well. You know, people like Thomas Helmer, former Dortmund player, but also Liverpool player, people like Robbie Fowler and so on. They manage their futures, their investments really well. And some players don't do it so well. I think about, you know, I wouldn't want to name any names, but just name one. Maybe Ike Immel is one guy who, you know, he had that George Best mentality of, you know, I spent a lot of money on alcohol and ladies and the rest, I just wasted it, you know?
Yeah, I love that quote, I have to say. First of all, the pressure, obviously it's different playing in the Premier League compared to playing in the Regionalliga because there's a lot more at stake. And, you know, the mistakes you make are more costly in the truest of senses because the promotion is good potentially for a club and a relegation isn't. And obviously the difference it makes between Championship and Premier League is a lot bigger than between Regionalliga and Third League in Germany if you're sort of getting promoted or relegated between those two leagues. So there comes
absolutely
a lot with that. But I think the most pressure that probably a footballer has is the pressure he puts on himself anyway. And
yeah. It's quite
And I think that's just something that I've learned with age. I feel nowadays I put less pressure on myself than I used to when I was younger, because when you're younger, it's probably more, you're playing the academy, you're playing in the 23s, so you don't quite know, okay, will I get my chance to play as a professional? Will I make it? And then once you've played on that level and you know, yes, I'm a professional and I can have a good career, that takes the pressure off and so far that you're not thinking about, okay, will I be able to, how long will I be able to play? Will I need to stop at 22, 23 because there's no other club coming in and I need to get a job to pay my rent? You go from those thoughts of this sort of pressure then to the pressure, okay, from earning a good amount of money to earning probably even a better amount when you're in the Championship compared to the Premier League. But you know, at the end of the month, you will always be able to pay your rent. That's something I will not lie about. So that's...
that's great.
That I do not have anymore, and I'm very grateful for that. But yes, you will always come along players who just spend their money on women, cars, alcohol, and waste the rest. That will happen. I think you'll always have those. Luckily, I have been raised a bit differently by my parents, and I think they've been able to give me some good values and to make me aware of the value of money and how hard you have to work for it. And I've spent 5 years in the lower leagues of Germany, so I know how long it can take to earn money. My father was a banker, my mother was working at a travel agency, my brother's working for the council in Germany, for a city council in Germany. So they have what you may classify as like a normal job with a normal income, so I know how long it takes to earn a lot, to earn money and to be able to make a living from it. So therefore, I would Well, just because I'm in a lucky position to earn a bit more now than I used to earn 5 years ago, it doesn't mean that I'm just wasting it. I've luckily met very good people who are also with perspectively to the future, planning for after the career, who have been who do have the right things in place. So if I'm not being very stupid, I think we are on a good way also to be able to pay our rent once I've retired.
That's good. That's excellent. Well, maybe when you're either a teacher or a coach, depending on how life would take you, thinking about your future, I guess a question I would love to ask. And by the way, honorary members is Dennis Chentana, who's the goalkeeping coach at Maccabi Tel Aviv in the Israeli league. And he's also the former goalkeeper of BVB for 2005-2006. He was the reserve keeper. And he's a huge friend of Tim Krul. So I'm sure Dennis would love you to say hi to Tim Krul from Dennis Chentana.
Of course. Yeah. I will do that when I see him after the game.
Where do you if you didn't play for Norwich City, where could you imagine yourself playing? Could you imagine doing something like Dennis, being in a smaller league like Israeli professional league, or MLS in the United States, or Switzerland like Moritz Leitner, or maybe in the Zweite Bundesliga or the Erste Bundesliga? What teams can you imagine playing for in the future?
Well, I think, because I'm living abroad, because I'm originally German, I enjoyed leaving Germany, because also, well, it was sort of the only option I had at that time, and it's sort of a step on the end. Pardon?
What a great option!
It was. I have to say, I was very lucky. So therefore, I think this aspect of probably being able or feeling comfortable leaving your home, or even leaving your current home, is something where I wouldn't say no. I just want to go back now, go back to Germany, or stay here forever. I'm quite open to many things when the time comes. First of all, what I said, I'd love to have a few more years here, and after that, then, well, probably towards more the end of my career, I'd always be open to say, okay, maybe 1 year could be America, could be somewhere else in Europe, something like Denmark, for example. I always found Scandinavia quite interesting anyway. Or
nice.
I was brought up in an area in Düsseldorf where we had loads of Japanese people, and therefore I've got a thing for the Japanese culture as well. So that would always be another thing that to consider. But apparently those things would just probably be for a year or two, because it is quite a long journey to get there, so it's hard for family to visit you. But yeah, I would definitely be open towards the end of my career to do something like quite exotic, to say so. Probably not as far as Australia, that could be a bit too far, but yeah, America also would always be an option. But that's, yeah, you see how everything will develop, and you can make plans, and then all of a sudden something unforeseen happens and they all go to waste. I've had that a bit too often lately with my injuries. So I just hope that when the time comes, there will always be options and I'd be open for that. Yeah.
That's what they say, isn't it? Life is what happens when you're busy making plans.
Yeah. I can confirm that for sure.
So wrapping it up, you've been an amazing guest. You've given insights into your time in the Premier League. You've talked about your younger days playing in the BVB 2 under Daniel Wagner and also under Farke. And of course, you've talked about Emi Buendia and the big, big, big transfer, Max Aarons. You've talked about meeting Kloppo, and you've confirmed what he is, basically what everybody thinks, which is he's a humble and decent guy. And it was also lovely to hear the insights about Felix Paslak, who I really like as a character, and also Moritz Leitner as well, who had some good days with BVB. Maybe not enough, but he's had some good days. And also we've talked a little bit about Dean Smith. I said Stuart Smith earlier, but of course
I didn't want to correct you. Yeah, but yeah, you mixed up Stuart Weber and Dean Smith, I think.
as I said. And I'm not going to mention Stuart Weber because, of course, I would love to know why the Daniel Farke thing blew up like that. But I have my own theory about that because suddenly all the German guys were gone and then suddenly Daniel Farke was gone. But let's not go there because that's controversy and that's the last thing we need on this show, especially in a time with pandemic when people have enough worries. Don't Norwich City have been so generous to allow me to talk to you. Let's just come right to the end to your experience of BVB. Why is BVB such an amazing club? I mean, let's face it, you know, you grew up in Düsseldorf. You could have played for Fortuna Düsseldorf. You were in the Borussia Mönchengladbach, the Fallen Elf, which is one of the most classic football clubs of Germany. For me, Gladbach, Erst FC Köln, Borussia Dortmund, those are really just massive clubs. It's not just Bayern München, the Bundesliga. And personally, I'm a huge fan of Bundesliga. As everybody knows, that's why I dedicate my work to promoting the Bundesliga. But tell me, you said earlier that you really enjoyed being in BVB and Westfalenstadion and so on, and Stadion Rote Erde. What is it that makes Borussia Dortmund such a magnetic club, such a special and unique club? You said that it's a club you admire in some ways more than Gladbach. I remember going to the old Birkelberg, and that was pretty cool. But I have to say, I agree with you. The new Borussia Park is a little bit of a sort of shopping center out in the middle of nowhere.
First of all, I think, and that's my personal experience, I did have a very, very good 8 years with Mönchengladbach. Probably was I was a bit younger then, so I was always commuting from Düsseldorf to Mönchengladbach. So therefore, I was still living in Düsseldorf and not probably getting the feel of it that much. Also, when I was playing in the second team with Dortmund, then obviously I moved there because it's a bit further away from Düsseldorf, so I had to move. The one thing is, there's a huge difference in the support for the under-23s. At Mönchengladbach, we did have very occasionally maybe 5 or 10 supporters. The rest was parents and ages and scouts and other
clubs. Yeah.
And that's the norm for an under-23 side. So that's nothing to really criticize. It just shows you how exceptional the second team in Dortmund is treated. We did have home games. We always had our ultras, our really hardcore supporters there.
Sektion Stadionverbot, I think, right? Some games, yeah, I remember, yeah. 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 fans.
Yeah, and that's certainly when the first team and the second team were playing at the same time, you would get 4,000, 5,000 supporters in there. Like, not just supporters to watch the game, but to actually support the game, from, the team for 90 minutes. I had the feeling in Dortmund, well, Dortmund and BVB are just more or less one thing. The people in this city love Borussia Dortmund. There's not much else for them. There's Borussia Dortmund, that's sort of religion to them. And it doesn't matter if you play in under 17s, under 19s, under 23s, or in the first team, they'll support. And that is something very, very unique, because also when we played, for example, the second team of Cologne or Schalke, there's hardly any supporters, but at Dortmund there is. That's what makes it very special on the one end, that you have that sort of, can you say conditionless, or like support without any sort of condition?
Yeah, total commitment.
Total commitment. The supporters are always there. They always back you. I mean, we got relegated in the first season. I was there, and still they always showed up. They've always applauded that because they've seen we've given it our best. They traveled. We got relegated, and then we played in the fourth tier. We played against, I think it was Schockhofer, probably
Schockhofer, yeah. Heard it.
And we had probably 1,000 supporters in the away end who were like just enjoying themselves, enjoying our game. I mean, I think we won 4-0, so it was a good game for them.
Yeah. But
you would never experience that, I think, with any other under-23 sides in Germany. Probably in Europe, it's hard for me to judge, but in Germany, I would say that's very unique. And in general, I would say their theme is Echte Liebe, which translates to true love.
Yeah.
And you can sense that. I felt just that at Dortmund there was a lot just coming from the heart. Doch der wahre Grund, dass man diese Stadt so liebt, heißt BVB, BVB 09. Borussia Dortmund, du bist unser Leben. Borussia Dortmund, du nur ganz allein. Borussia Dortmund, hast uns so viel.